Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the April 23rd edition of the County Chronicle. We'll begin with the first page stories. Arcola City Council. Pass budget approves 1% grocery tax by Ben Crane. The Arcola City Council passed their FY 2026 budget during the meeting Monday with a few items to note. Arcola's general fund revenue for fiscal year 2024 was initially budgeted at nearly $1.75 million, and year-to-date figures show collections at just over $1.74 million, closely aligning with the city's financial expectations. However, spending has significantly exceeded the initial budget, totaling approximately $2 million year-to-date against the planned $1.72 million, creating a deficit of $262,000. The fiscal year 2025 budget anticipates a substantial increase in revenue to about $2.95 million, largely due to expected state-funded infrastructure projects, most notably the Illinois Department of Transportation road project related to the Libman facility will bring in approximately $936,000. Additionally, increased state sales tax and income tax revenues are projected, growing to $422,000 and $482,000, respectively. The video gaming tax is also expected to rise sharply from $55,000 to $80,000. On the expense side, Arcola anticipates expenditures of nearly $2.9 million for fiscal year 2025, reflecting major investments in infrastructure, public safety, and city facilities. A significant portion, $1.51 million, is earmarked for the streets and alleys, including $930,000 dedicated to the Libman truck route project. Police department spending will rise notably from $666,000 to $815,000, driven by higher salary allocations, health insurance costs, and capital improvements. Although park and pool expenditures soared to over $448,000 in fiscal year 2024, far surpassing the initial $244,000 budget, the upcoming budget proposes a reduction to about $225,000. Despite this cut, significant investments remain, including planned maintenance and capital improvements. Overall, despite the overspending in fiscal year 2024, the city's administration projects a surplus of nearly $49,000 for fiscal year 2025, banking heavily on anticipated revenue growth and careful expenditure management. The council also retained a 1% tax on groceries. The state is abolishing its 1% tax on groceries, so the city, like many across Illinois, is implementing its own 1% grocery tax. Consumers will see no difference, but instead of going to the state, the tax revenue will now go to the city. The next article, Arthur School Board. Arthur Schools Seek Custodian Night Crew by Ariana Cherry. Superintendent Shannon Cheek announced that the school district was in need of a custodian night crew at the most recent Arthur CUSD No. 305 school board meeting held on Wednesday, April 16th. We have open positions in each building and we're needing these positions filled as we are trying to have a full custodial crew. We have zero applicants at the moment. If it doesn't come to fruition by next year, we will have to reach out to a few other companies, he said. Cheek also announced that the school district is looking to update their phone system and get new cameras. The phone system is long overdue. If the phones go down now, they're so old that there's no replacement for them. We're looking to replace these this summer, Cheek informed. There was also a meeting held with Hart to talk about cameras. Cheek noted that they needed to talk to Amanda Romine, the technology coordinator, about the budget and getting a grant. We won't be looking at the highest-end cameras, but we hope to get enough grant money to be able to do something with AI. It would be nice to have cameras with better picture quality, ones that pick up movement, and have add-on features that can program into the cameras, Cheek explained. Other items discussed and voted upon. The March bank statement had a balance of $1,121,000. The total of all funds was $14,743,000. The education balance was $8,811, building fund $2,093,000, and the transportation fund was $190,000. The bonds and interest had a total of $220,000. Cheek talked about some of the recent work that has been done at the control panel was replaced and overdue landscaping was completed at Atwood Hammond Grade School. Additionally, a window in the girls' locker room in the old gym high school was repaired. One more water fountain will be getting changed out for water cooler in Arthur Grade School. The district is looking to get a grant from Delta Dental. Emily Coombe, CEO Facility and Arcola High School English teacher, spoke to the school board about the upcoming CEO trade show to be held on April 26th. The public is invited. The district renewed their contract for another year with Aramark Food Service for the 2025-26 school year. There's been a 326% increase, but in the current climate, that isn't terrible, commented Cheek. Four students will be attending the Special Olympics, one from Arthur Grade School and three from high school. Swimming co-op with Sullivan, Shelbyville, and Oka Valley was approved. Renewal of the IESA membership for the 2025-26 school year was approved. Three donations totaling $2,190 were given to the district to help pay for unpaid school lunches, the backpack program, and for classroom sensory items. Cheeks shared some celebrations during the board meeting. He congratulated Mrs. Graham on officially finishing her superintendent endorsement. Christy Meckling was recognized for her service and efforts at the ALAH Board of Education. I want to recognize her professionalism and expertise. Christy is a strategic thinker and knows numbers and always asks good questions. The board and community will miss her. We will miss what she brings to the table, but we're also happy for her next stage. I would like to extend a sincere thank you for her service, Cheeks said. Personnel report. Certified. Approved hiring Cheyenne Miller as the school nurse. Approved hiring Tegan Gard as the SLP for AGS. Accepted resignation from Justine Gilmer as special education teacher at the high school. Accepted resignation from Sailor Bauer as math teacher at the high school. Approved hiring Honor Baker as general music teacher at AHGS and LGS. Accepted resignation from Rose Hollingsworth as special education teacher at LGS and extracurricular. Approved hiring Mitch Wilson for summer school driver's education. Approved hiring Ginger Vogel as food pantry coordinator. Approved hiring Heather Strack as summer school instructor. Accepted resignation from Mac Condell as head girls basketball coach. Approved hiring Austin Romine for head high school cross country coach. Next article, Villa Grove City Council. Tibbetts recounts high speed chase. The Villa Grove City Council met on April 14th for their monthly voting meeting with all aldermen plus Mayor Cassandra Eversole Gunter in attendance. Chief of Police Cole Tibbetts noted that a high-speed chase that had passed through Camargo and Villa Grove in the early morning hours of April 12th had ended successfully with two felony suspects from Paris being apprehended. He also reported that he was working with an area landlord to clean up his properties on Vine Street and Hancock Drive. A proposal was made to the landlord to expedite the cleanup without him being cited. However, if no progress is made within 15 days, escalating citations will begin to be assessed. Administrator Jackie Athey then made her report, noting that working on the budget continued. She also said that the payroll module had been rebuilt, and she asked for a special budget meeting to be held on April 21st at 6 p.m. She also noted that the April 28th meeting would be a voting meeting so that several issues could be voted on before their deadline. Finally, she noted that she would be attending an Economic Council training meeting on April 15th. She also noted that she would be in contact with Waste Management, and the annual curbside cleanup event will be held in June, with the 7th, 21st, and 28th becoming the possible dates. No final date has been set by press time. Public Works Director Mark McSell then reported that bathrooms had been reopened at both Henson and Rickman Parks. He noted that a 2-inch water line needed repair at Henson, and a contractor had been brought in to complete the repair. He then noted that John Leon Reservoir chemical treatment had begun and that the shore cleanup project was complete. Next, he reported that Richmond Park Retention Area project was well underway, as was the installation of a 20-inch main drainage for stormwater relocation, and that the goal is to have both projects complete by July. Finally, he said he had contact with IDNR fisheries specialists who told him that they would be in town in June to complete an inventory of fish in the reservoir and that all 5 listed species would be repopulated as needed. Alderman Thelma Blaney then reported that a constituent had been in touch with her concerning new waste company in Tuscola, as well as the CIMA energy agreement that several Douglas County towns were part of. Finding no other business, Alderman Tony Hooker called for adjournment at 6:45 p.m. The next article, Douglas County Board approves two project bids at Animal Shelter by Ben Crane. The Douglas County Board approved two bids for projects at the Douglas County Animal Shelter at their monthly meeting on Wednesday. The board approved a bid from Randy Frick Concrete for $9,000 to excavate, to grade, form, pour, and finish a 20 by 30 foot pad and a 4 by 8 foot sidewalk for the portable dog kennel building. The second project will repair the pole barn at the property in the amount $8,450 from Happy Green Services to anchor the dog building to concrete, build a breezeway between the buildings, install gutters at the new building, and for electrical and water work at the new building. The board also appropriated $64,000 for the University of Illinois Extension to contribute to the funding of the extension's operations. The amount reflected a 2% increase, keeping up with the Consumer Price Index. Two resolutions were passed relating to the upcoming County Line Road project in Arthur, including a contract with Howell Paving Incorporated and the appropriation of motor fuel tax funds for the project. $6,378,000 was the amount approved with the company in the resurfacing reconstruction contract, while $205,000 of MFT funds will be appropriated. The board also approved a contract bond with Earl Walker Company Incorporated of $259,000 for construction maintenance in Murdoch Township. Three liquor licenses were renewed with Aikman Wildlife, Smokehouse Cabin, and Kaskaskia Country Club, and the board rounded out the meeting by approving Blue Cross Blue Shield as the county's employer health insurer for 18 months. The next article, Tariff Turmoil, Tariff Uncertainty Causes Concern for Douglas County Employers, by Ben Crane. As the Trump administration implements sweeping new rounds of tariffs on goods from China and other countries, several major employers in Douglas County are feeling the strain, from mop handle assemblers to car dealerships to household cleaning product manufacturers. The tariffs, which sharply increase the cost of imported goods, have upended operations at Monahan Partners and the Libman Company, two longtime Arcola manufacturers. Auto dealerships like Ford of Tuscola are also bracing for the ripple effects in vehicle parts and new car prices. While President Donald Trump has defended the tariffs as a necessary move to protect American industries, local business leaders say the sudden escalation has created widespread uncertainty and imposed steep costs on businesses that rely on global supply chains. Tariffs are taxes imposed by a government on imported goods. They're designed to make foreign products more expensive, thereby encouraging consumers to purchase domestic alternatives. However, tariffs can also lead to higher costs for businesses that rely on imported materials, potentially resulting in increased prices for customers. It's a tax on U.S. businesses, not on China, said Kevin Monahan, president of Partners, which assembles mop sticks and cleaning hardware for commercial and janitorial use. We anticipate there might be raised tariffs under the new president, but not to this level. When it gets to that level, you're really putting us in a difficult position. Monahan Partners has imported plastics and metal mop components from the same family-owned supplier in China for nearly 40 years. Although the handles, rivets, and packaging materials are not all sourced domestically, Monahan said relying solely on U.S. suppliers for the hardware would make their products non-competitive in price. We're supposed to be the epitome of what makes the U.S. economy great, a fourth-generation small family business in a rural Midwestern town, and it's having a real negative impact on us for sure, Monahan said. The timing of the tariffs has also been disruptive. Monahan said the company currently has a container en route from China that will be hit with tariffs of up to 150% on some items, a cost that is almost impossible to pass along to customers without risking significant business loss. Our position right now is we can survive weeks, but we can't survive months like this, Monahan said. We have no control over it, and we have no insight into the long-term strategy or goal. Across town at the Libman Company, a leading manufacturer of brooms, mops, and cleaning tools, the impact of tariff has been more muted, but not insignificant. We make most of our products in the USA, so in that regard, we may not be having much impact as it has on other companies, said Andrew Libman, company president. But we do source some components and items from China and other international countries that round out our product line. Libman said the company is weighing whether to shift some sourcing to other countries or discontinue certain imported products altogether, if tariffs make them too costly. He emphasized that business planning has been complicated by the fluctuating tariffs announcement and lack of clarity about future rates. I don't necessarily completely disagree with the concept of tariffs, but I think the implementation could have been spread out to give us more time to plan, Libman said. Libman expects some moderate inflation across their product lines, an estimated 2-5% increase on certain items, but does not foresee major workforce impacts at this time. Still, both Monahan and Libman noted the broader challenge of running manufacturing operations amid rising costs across the board, from electricity to insurance, while trying to maintain U.S.-based production. In Tuscola, the potential effects of tariffs on the automotive industry are also looming. At Ford of Tuscola, sales manager Eli Olteen said the dealership has been focusing on controlling what it can, assisting customers with purchasing decisions and servicing vehicles while navigating uncertainty. As right now, more so just trying to take care of the things we can control, Alteen said. There are incentives out there from Ford to try and help with maybe some of the upcoming uncertainties, but we really don't know exactly what the tariffs will look like yet. Olteen noted that while tariffs may eventually impact the cost of new vehicles and parts, used cars remain largely unaffected, a key advantage for customers trading in or purchasing pre-owned vehicles. Used cars are tough to come by at a reasonable expense, but right now, People who are trading in vehicles are seeing stronger values because of that shortage, Ultine said. We just continue to do everything we can to take care of our customers, even during uncertain times. All three business leaders said the lack of stability and predictability has been one of the most damaging aspects of the tariff policy, especially for small and mid-sized companies in rural America. Business has always had challenges, Libman said. You just have to constantly manage costs, and the tariffs add another unknown to the equation. For companies like Monahan Properties that rely on decades-long supply relationships, the decision to shift sourcing is not just a financial one, it's also personal. We would be ending that partnership for something that's under neither of our company's control, Monahan said. That's hard to stomach. Although the full economic fallout of the new tariffs is still developing, Douglas County businesses are already bracing for higher costs, tighter margins, and tough decisions ahead. The next article, Leaders Aim to Boost Visibility of Rural Employment Services by Ben Crane. Dr. Justin Arnold, director of the East Central Illinois Workforce Board, led an informational session Monday in Arcola aimed at raising awareness of state and federal workforce investments available to Douglas County residents and businesses. The event, held in partnership with the Douglas County Economic Development Corporation and the Champaign County Regional Planning Commission, sought to increase the visibility and usage of workforce development services across rural areas. Arnold said the board oversees workforce investments in Iroquois, Ford, Douglas, Piatt, and Champaign counties on behalf of local governments. The goal is to increase visibility and usage of federal and state workforce investments in rural counties, Arnold said. We have staff based here locally. We want people to know that these services exist and are available to them. Despite sending out more than 200 invitations to employers and community stakeholders, fewer than 20 people attended the session. Arnold said he would like to higher turnout, but was pleased with the engagement from those who did attend. We would have liked to have seen more people, but those in the room were involved, asked good questions, and gave us ideas on how to better promote these resources, he said. Arnold explained that workforce investments include career services, training services, business services, and youth services. Career services offer job search assistance, application help, labor market information, and guidance on community resources. Training services provide tuition support, career coaching, and other assistance to eligible individuals seeking technical training for in-demand jobs. Business services offer customized training grants for employers to upskill workers, with the goal of improving retention, promotions, or wage increases. Youth services target disconnected young adults who are not in school or employed, offering customizable career exploration programs. These dollars are here, and they can pay for these services, Arnold said. When you talk about workforce development, it can sound vague. We want it to make it tangible. Arnold also provided an overview of Douglas County's labor market. He noted the county has a labor force of more than 15,000 people, with about 60% of residents living and working in the county. Approximately 600 employers in industries such as manufacturing, healthcare, business services, and construction are actively hiring. Even if people are commuting, they're still contributing to the local economy, Arnold said. There's a strong case to be made for focusing on Douglas County. Arnold said he hoped the event would help connect the community with the board's career coach based in Tuscola, who will serve as primary contact for workforce development services. Arnold said he hopes future events will attract more city officials and local leaders. I really want to connect with different cities and their leaders, he said. Last year, when Rhino Ag closed in Ford County, mayors told me they wished they had grants to help displaced workers and youth explore career paths. What they didn't realize was that these resources already existed through us. Arnold said outreach events like Thursday's session are crucial to making sure rural communities are aware of the available programs. I don't want people saying they don't know we were here, he said. We're here and we're ready to help. We'll move now to the obituaries. Karen Joan Failer, 76, of Arcola, passed away at 8:46 p.m. on Saturday, April 19, 2025, at Carriage Crossing Senior Living in Arcola. Mass of Christian burial will be held at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, April 29th at St. John the Baptist Catholic Church, 210 South Payne Street, Arcola. Father Michael Trummel will officiate. Burial will follow in the Arcola Cemetery. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. on Monday, April 28th at the Edwards Funeral Home, 221 East Main Street in Arcola. Gary D. Cornwell, 77, of Arthur, passed away on April 12, 2025 at Barnes Jewish Hospital in St. Louis, Missouri. A celebration of life will be held at the Arthur Fire Department on Saturday, May 3rd from 1 to 4 p.m. Schrader Funeral Home, Arthur, is assisting the family with arrangements. Felipe Ruiz, 91, of Arcola, passed away at 3:13 p.m. on Saturday, April 19, 2025, at the Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Visitation was Monday, April 21st at the Edwards Funeral Home, Arcola. Funeral Mass was held on Tuesday, April 22nd at St. John the Baptist Catholic Church. Father Michael Trummer officiated. Burial will be in the Magdalena Municipal Cemetery in Magdalena, Jalisco, Mexico. Janet Christ, 88, of Atwood, passed away at 4:14 a.m. on Monday, April 21st, 2025, at her residence. Funeral services will be held at 2 p.m. on Friday, April 25th, at the United Church of Atwood, 210 North Main Street, Atwood. The Reverend Mike Drake will officiate. Burial will follow at the Mackville Cemetery in Atwood. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the funeral at the church. The Edwards Funeral Home is assisting with arrangements. James D. Andrews, 82, Atwood, passed away on Friday, April 11th, 2025, at his home. Graveside services were held Saturday, April 19th, at the Lake Fork Cemetery north of Atwood. There was a dinner after at the United Church of Atwood. Anita Marie Gilliand, 82, of Fort Myers, Florida, formerly of Arcola, passed away at 9:50 p.m. on Monday, April 14th, 2025, at her residence. Funeral services were held Tuesday, April 22nd, at the Edwards Funeral Home, Arcola. The Reverend Hans Sherman officiated. Burial followed in the Arcola Cemetery. Visitation was held prior to the service on Tuesday at the funeral home. David W. Fuqua, 85, of Champaign, formerly of Ivesdale, passed away on Wednesday, April 16, 2025, at 7:45 p.m. at Haven of Bement. Funeral services were held Monday, April 21st, at Hines Funeral Home and Cremation Services, Bement. Pastor Justin Neufeld officiated. Visitation was held prior to the services on Monday at the funeral home. Burial will with military honors by the Albert Parker American Legion Post No. 620 were in the Bement Township Cemetery. Memorial contributions may be made to the Bement Food Pantry or Donor's Choice. Anna Marie Lamp, 86, of Arthur, passed away at 11:50 p.m. on Sunday, March 23, 2025, at the Arthur home surrounded by family. Graveside service will be held at 11 a.m. on Friday, April 25th, in the Arthur Cemetery. The Reverend John Stewart will officiate. The Edwards Funeral Home is assisting with arrangements. Anne Trevarthen, 79, of Newman, passed away peacefully on Friday, April 11, 2025, at Newman Rehab and Healthcare Center in Newman. Anne will be laid to rest at the Roseland Memorial Park in Terre Haute at 1 p.m. on Wednesday, April 24th. Another article, Illinois Amish Heritage Center to break ground this month on new visitor and museum facility. The Illinois Amish Heritage Center will break ground this month on a new 10,000-square-foot visitor and museum center, marking a major expansion in its mission to preserve and share the story of Amish life in Illinois. Located just east of Arthur and west of Arcola off the Interstate 57 exit, the center announced the project as a significant milestone that will increase its educational offerings and attract tourism to the region. This visitor center will be more than a museum. It will be a living classroom rooted in the soil of Amish tradition, said David King, executive director of the Illinois Amish Heritage Center. Through hands-on agricultural education and immersive cultural programming, we're inviting every visitor from school children to scholars to walk away with a deeper understanding and appreciation of the values, resiliency, and legacy of the Amish people in Illinois. New facility to expand exhibits and programs. The facility is expected to serve as a hub for rotating exhibits, educational programs, and community events. Features will include a film and exhibit gallery highlighting Amish life, past and present, a genealogy research library and archival space, a children's discovery area with interactive exhibits, a multi-purpose gallery for speakers, school groups, and rotating art displays, a gift shop with Amish quilts, handmade crafts, and local goods, rental and catering space for private events, curriculum materials, seasonal exhibits, and a speaker series are also in development as part of the center's expanding programming. Celebrating Amish history. The center currently features a number of historic buildings that have been restored or relocated to the site. These include the 1882 Schrock House, the 1865 Moses Yoder House, the oldest known Amish home in Illinois, the Miller Amish German School, and newly reconstructed 1879 Hirschberger Miller Barn. Signature events returning to 2025 include Sheep to Yarn to Quilts on April 26, showcasing fiber arts and heritage crafts, Harvest a Home, October 10th through 11th, featuring demonstrations of traditional farming methods. The center also offers guided Amish country tours that include visits to the historic buildings, shopping at the local businesses, and meals in Amish homes. A community-funded vision. Construction of the visitor center is expected to cost more than $3 million. Years of grant funding, volunteer hours, and private donations have made the project possible, and fundraising efforts are ongoing. This is a project for the entire community, one that reaches across generations and beyond county and state lines, King said. It will preserve the legacy of a people whose quiet strength, craftsmanship, and deep-rooted values continue to shape our region. Though the April groundbreaking is only by invitation only, the public is encouraged to follow the center's progress and support the project. Details and updates will be available at www.illinoisamish.org about the Illinois Amish Heritage Center. Founded in 1994 as the Illinois Amish Interpretive Center, the Illinois Amish Heritage Center is a nonprofit organization dedicated to preserving and interpreting the culture and history of the Amish in Illinois from 1865 to the present. The center now occupies a 7-acre living history site between Arthur and Chesterville. In addition to its historic buildings and exhibit, the center hosts seasonal events and educational programming throughout the year. The upcoming Visitor and Museum Center will expand its mission by offering new classroom space, a genealogy library, and enhanced resources for school and tour groups. Christie Clinic hosts CPR training. The Christie Clinic Illinois Race Weekend team has organized a free, hands-only CPR training program, and the final session is Friday, April 25th at 3 p.m. The program is open to all runners, community members, and visitors interested in taking part. Not only will the training be a part of the race weekend, but it will also be taking place on the football field inside Memorial Stadium, creating a memorable experience for participants while learning a life-saving skill. The program was created after last year's race weekend when 45-year-old Christie surgeon Raphael Ruggieri suffered a cardiac arrest while running in the Christie Clinic Illinois Half Marathon. Raphael survived because of the exceptional care he received that day, which began with high-quality CPR by his son Isaac, who was running with him that day, and three other runners who also knew hands-only CPR. Another article, Special Memories of Making and Delivering May Baskets by Penny Sigler. According to a brief internet search, the custom of delivering May Day baskets stems from the day's old European festival that marked the peak of summer, spring and the becoming of summer. Over the years, May Day celebrations have involved exchanging wildflowers, weaving garlands, and decorating maypoles to mark the return of spring. In the late 1800s to the early 1900s, the tradition of secretly delivering baskets of treats or flowers on May 1st began in the United States. Giving baskets was described in newspapers during the late 1800s and early 1900s, with some articles referring to this holiday as May Basket Day. In her novel, Jack and Jill, published in 1880, Louisa May Alcott described the tradition of children hanging May baskets on the doors of their friends the night before May Day. In our family, our earliest memories of the 1st of May and months of preparation leading up to it are filled with memories of our sister, mom, grandma, and friend Barb Thomas. Her sister, Ramona Mildsdorfer, recalls being 4 or 5 years old when her older sister Barb helped her to make a simple basket out of construction paper. They picked dandelions and violets out of their yard and laid them in the paper baskets. They went around the neighborhood, setting the baskets on the front porch or steps. Barb was 19 or 20 at the time, but Ramona suspects that she liked starting doing this much earlier. She would guess that their mother, Ethel Peterson, probably started the May basket delivery tradition with both of her elder sisters, Phyllis Kleiss and Barb, when they were young. As time went on, Barb started making the baskets out of wallpaper samples and using artificial flowers that people could save. She was very particular about who got which basket and created them with specific people in mind. She would start making them not long after Christmas season, so that she had plenty of time by the time May 1st came around. Though Barb's husband, Frank, felt proud of Barb's commitment to bringing some joy and fun to the community come May, but from January to delivery day, you could guarantee you would hear Frank grumbling about stepping on staples or stepping over boxes of May Day baskets lining the outskirts of their family room. Barb would go out late on April 30th or in the very early morning hours of May 1st, delivering her May baskets to friends, neighbors, acquaintances, businesses, schools in Villa Grove and Camargo, and to assisted living and nursing homes in Tuscola and Newman. She even mailed them to people from Villa Grove that had moved away. She made easily over 500 baskets every year. As time went on, Barb shared the tradition with her daughter Penny, granddaughter Kelly, and even with her great-granders by including them in the delivery and making baskets for them to give to their teachers. Years later, as Barb got older and making the deliveries on her own became more difficult, Ramona helped Barb with some of the deliveries like she had in their youth, as well as her daughter Penny. Even when others started helping more with the deliveries, Barb still created and made a point of wanting to do most of them on her own. There was never a list, she just went from her memory. That is all we have time for this week. This is Chris Yerke saying goodbye and see you again next week.